Hello, I'm Hattie Ashton. I host this podcast, but I'm just popping on before it gets going to highlight a campaign I launched offering free sponsorship on this podcast. I thought now more than ever, we need to be lifting each other, especially those running small businesses. So this episode, I'm very excited to say, is sponsored by For Me Books. And here's a short audio by the publisher Ebony to tell you more about what they do.
Did you know that less than 4% of children's books feature a black protagonist? Or that less than 2% of children's book creators are black? Here at For Me Books, we're on a mission to deliver beautiful own voices children's books by black creators, giving children access to positive representation in both their books and the industry. All children should see themselves reflected back in the books they love and see book creation as a viable career path. We're running a Kickstarter to publish 4 new children's books by 8 black creators. You can help by pledging to the campaign and amplifying the message that black representation matters. Your pledge not only supports the creation of these much needed books, but the creatives and independent publisher behind them.
If you would like to support For Me Books Kickstarter campaign, go to their website formebooks.com for more info. And don't forget, if you would like to sponsor a future episode for free, go to screamroomoflaughter.com. And don't forget, we are also on Patreon.
This is the Funny Mummies podcast, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Hattie Ashdown, comedian, writer, actress and mother to 2 very lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, arts and everyone who can help us in this crazy world of parenting. So settle in as we find the funny side of parenting and being bloody great women.
Hello, I'm Hattie Ashdown and welcome to the Funny Mummies for the Other Woman show on Soho Radio. This is another episode in our birth story series. In this episode, we speak to Alexa Strum as she shares with us her very positive experience of a C-section birth and lots of other funny and quite inspiring takes on motherhood and work. And I'm very happy that I'm joined by my favourite regular co-host, Gemma Beagley. Now, Alexis is an actress, writer and singer-songwriter and a hard-working single mum of one. She kept the female nation going with her funny women survival guide podcast over the lockdown. She hosts The Time I Almost. Her comedy acting credits include BBC's Wannabe, ITV's Time Wasters, Sky's Sick Note, and many more. As a stand-up, she was the character Aussie Denise, which gave her a finalist spot in the Funny Women's Award. She's also written songs for Kylie Minogue and Rachel Stevens. So, let's get on with listening. So, we do a little quick fire round. It's like, you know what it's like as a mum, you never get to finish a conversation, so you never feel got a mum friend round here, I've known her for 4 years, I still know very little about her. So, get to end any conversation. So, this is a very quick fire round, just don't think about your answer, just to get to know you. So,
okay.
Tea or coffee?
Both.
Oh, stand-up or acting?
Acting.
I think I know the answer. Babies or toddlers?
Oh, babies.
Babies. Teething or tantrums?
Oh, teething. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, welcome.
My tantrums. Sorry.
Yeah. I've got an extra one. I wrote. Here we go. Your go-to parenting meal: chicken nuggets and chips, or smashed avocado on quinoa.
Oh God, the first one. I've never had quinoa.
I was going to say, I wouldn't judge you, but
no, we're not healthy. I had all the plan to be healthy and cook organic and
did you?
Mince stuff and pulverize stuff, and it never actually happened. No, I didn't factor in that my child has a will of her own and a mind of her own. You see, when you make all these decisions,
yeah.
and then the baby comes in. So she's 5. She's going to be 6 in November.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, we were saying off air it was. So, we really were very similarly because my oldest is 5. So, but.
Oh, okay. 5,
so, we were just meeting each other, being pregnant on the circuit, as it were. So we're going to talk about a host of things, but I thought this might be maybe a nice wrap up to our sort of birthing episodes. So let's go back. Take us back to.
Am I going back in the tunnel? Is this my birth or my daughter's birth?
This is your.
I can just regress. away.
Well, you know what? I have asked people if they do know anything about their own birth. I love to hear it because a lot of people don't know anything.
And they I think just the angels sang and, you know, like. No, I don't know much. I think I was an easy birth, my mum says. I'm a second child.
Right.
So I just flew out. I just flew out of there.
Same, yeah.
Oh, really,
yeah.
Gemma?
Oh, yeah, piece mum said, yeah. Because as you know, my mum had said to me while I was pregnant, the bigger the baby, the easier the birth, you see. And I was a big and ugly, the ugliest thing she'd ever seen. She said. There you go.
You'd love Gemma's mum. She is a hoot.
Oh, I love top quality mums are my favourite. I just want to hang out with some good mums right now.
Well, I was number four, so my mum just coughed and I think
I dropped out.
So so we're going back to 2014. She was and so what was she, can I ask if she was planned or.
Yes, actually someone asked me that on a dating app recently, so I swiftly blocked him. He was like, oh, so I noticed you've got a child or children, whatever. Was your child planned? And I thought, that is literally, that's got to be up there to ask someone when trying to date them, surely. When you haven't even met them.
Why ask?
Because I think maybe he wanted to ascertain whether I was a slut before meeting. Do you know what I mean? Like, how loose can your morals be if you've had, like, an unplanned child? I think, not that I'm saying that that's the case, but I think he was hoping that, you know, that it was, like, some sort of indicator of my personality. It was so incredibly rude. It really took me aback. And he was a composer. He was like a really well-educated composer. He wasn't like massively younger than me or anything. And I just thought, wow, that's so rude. But I digress. She was very much planned. I was married. We really wanted to have a child stroke children. Mm. And we did all the right things once we realized that there's a fertility window in every month. Prior to that, we just didn't have a clue. And then went to the doctors and said, oh, been a few months, nothing's happening. She said, oh, you do know you have to kind of get down to it when you're ovulating. And we're both sort of like, what?
Yeah.
What's an ovule? Do you know what I mean? We're a bit stupid with it, when it came to that sort of thing. And then as soon as we knew the right time, it happened very quickly, actually. It's quite surprising. That moment, I've got a picture, actually, of myself holding that pregnancy test. It's so incredible, isn't it? Yeah, and I've still got the pregnancy test.
I think I've got mine somewhere.
Melody, my daughter, went.
Pissed on it.
That's got we on it. Yeah, exactly. But that moment is so wonderful. And I'm always really conscious of people that have a pregnancy test and then aren't successful with the baby and they don't end up having a baby. And it takes away from that wonderful moment. And I just kind of always want to acknowledge that not everybody is as lucky to have a full term pregnancy, etc. But that is a lovely moment. It's a really amazing moment of, it just feels like, you know, when you bake a cake, you put all the ingredients together and you think, if I put baking powder in that and a bit of an egg, how's that ever going to make, I don't understand, how's that going to make a cake? And then when it all goes together and you've done it, it feels like such a huge achievement, I think.
I'm sure we've all got friends who have struggled to get pregnant and they've gone through fertility treatment. And when you sit and you listen to them, they say, well, all the things that have to happen in order to get pregnant. Where it has to get there and then go there and then this happens and that has to happen and that has to happen and that. And you think, fuck me, like, how does it ever happen by accident? Almost, you know, accident unplanned. You know, it is. Without getting too deep, but it is a fucking miracle, really.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
I think that's what came over me. Yeah, I was just going to say when you said baking a cake, I was like, very appropriate to bun in the oven, of course. but yeah, so I remember that sort of like, I just couldn't acknowledge that I was. Pregnant, really, not one of those ones in denial, way. But it wasn't until he literally came out, I was like, oh, it's a baby.
Yeah. You don't really believe it, I suppose, do you? Even when it's moving around, it's such a strange sensation. It sometimes in the beginning, it just feels like, I suppose, like you got the farts or whatever. But then when you see it turning as well, that was another moment, a real old moment of just seeing her in my body. And God, yeah, I mean, yeah, being pregnant was the best time of my entire life.
Oh, really? I was going to say, you enjoyed being pregnant.
Oh my God, I loved it. And I was still, I was working full time in, I've had various other like muggles jobs in between all the fabulousness. And I was working at the Stock Exchange full time. And I was waddling in every day, but on the train, and you know, it was always packed. But I just used to stand there and just think, God, I'm so grateful. I'm so lucky to have this experience. And, that's the only reason I'd have another child, is just to be pregnant. And then
people are so, I also work full-time commute and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
People are so nice to you, aren't they?
Yeah, they were actually. And they go, fortunate.
And they look at you and go, oh. And everyone is just so nice to you. It's such a great time.
You've been pregnant as well, Gemma, didn't you?
Oh, I was brilliant at it. Brilliant at it.
Did you not? Did you not like it?
I like parts of it. I think I look quite good pregnant.
Yeah, that's always helpful, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, carried well. My mum would say, oh, you can carry well. But I just got, it's boring. I just got all different aches and pains. I've got this thing called PGP, which is like, I think it's got a new name now, pelvic girdle pain. So I was just in pain a lot. And both of them, I had the morning sickness thing for about 3 months with the first one. Second one, I had it for about 4 months, and it's it just takes the shine off it. But I had sort of like a honeymoon period bit in the middle, and so I enjoy parts of it, but yeah, just in like, yeah, find it difficult to move. But when it was good, I get it. Yeah, so that's lovely.
I didn't have any morning sickness.
Didn't you?
But so, I did have, but around, so I think it was around the 12 week scan sort of time, I suddenly started bleeding and I was at work. And that feeling that I might lose her, I think that really made me appreciate the pregnancy all the more.
Oh.
So I went and had one of those. I had to pay for a scan because I was at work. I couldn't get to my doctor's. There was no appointments and all that. And I thought, well, I'm in the city. There's a place around the corner and I'll just pay and get a scan. And that, you know, just the reassurance of hearing that heartbeat was incredible. But there's so, as you say, Gemma, there's so many things along the road that can go wrong with a pregnancy. And I was a geriatric mum, so, you know, you have that drilled into you at every single appointment that you have.
You get extra appointments and all that, don't you?
That's it, you know, and you get that little booklet that's got the age brackets. It's like, you know, over 37, we usually boil you down for glue. But, you know, on this occasion, if you have a baby, it's probably not going to turn out how you plan. It's very frightening. So to meet all those milestones and still have the baby is a really huge miracle, and I appreciate that.
So how were you feeling about the birth? Were you feeling positive then? Did you have a birth plan, as they say?
No, because I always knew, because I'd had a fibroid removed a few years prior to that, and I'd always had ovarian cysts and endo and all different various bits and bobs that you could possibly have. So I'd had a very large fibroid that made me look at the time like I was 16 weeks pregnant, and I'd had that removed. So the doctor said, if you ever bear children, you won't be able to have it at your fanny. So I was quite pleased because I knew.
Do you know why that is, Alexis? Could you explain why that would be?
Yeah, because the position that they cut at was sort of similar to a C-section cut. So they went through the same cut, and it could have potentially tore the womb. So they said to me, if you really want to have it naturally, what you'll have to do is make sure you get to the hospital within half an hour of the first contraction or you might die. And I'm like, take it out the sunroof. I'm fine with that.
Take it out wherever you need to plume and take it out.
Absolutely. So it was weird because throughout the pregnancy, they kept saying, well, you've got the option. So I did all the antenatal classes. And I remember this lovely nurse of bringing out all the accoutrement, like the pliers and stuff, and talk and thinking, I can't do this, I'm terrified. So I got the easy way out, and I do know of friends who've elected to have a C-section because they're so terrified, and that's totally valid. I completely understand that.
Yeah,
I can sort of get away with mine. That I it wasn't that I was too posh to push, but could have ruptured my womb and, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was nice because I knew the date, which is a really good bonus, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can plan. So I had the date planned and bought a house at the same time. And the, we exchanged on the house same day as the elective C-section. So it was an absolute, oh, it was just a nightmare. But yeah, a very pleasant.
Because I know very little about C-sections. I only know,
okay.
Like, my sister had, you know, often, like you say, it's nice that it was elected because my sister's was like an emergency one, which is a very different experience.
Yeah.
So what happens then? So you've got your date set, you've got your little bag packed.
Yeah, it's really surreal because it doesn't feel like you're going in for a baby. I'd had lots of operations in the past. Such a sharp one, I had loads of operations. So it just feels like you're going for a procedure and they call it a procedure. And you turn up in the morning. It was all obviously on the NHS. Fantastic. They said you're going to go in at 8:45. It'll, you know, the baby will be out by 9. Wow. And you go, you go and have the worst bit was the, it's like a dorsal block or some sort of epidural,
spinal,
I guess.
Spinal block thing. Yeah.
Spinal block. Yeah. That was kind of unpleasant. But once they'd done that, literally they whack you on the table and the guy, the surgeon, who was very cavalier, I didn't like his attitude. He was very like, I've been there before, you know, I've done this.
Right.
Just straight away.
Was he playing classical music or something?
No, he wasn't. But there were a lot of people in the room as well. It wasn't an emotional, it didn't feel like a massively emotional situation. No one really sort of cared. I mean, I'm saying this now, I've never actually thought of this before, but no one really cared to sort of check in with how I was, or is there something we can do? Is there some music you'd like or something?
Yeah.
It was just very like, let's whip out this wart sort of thing. And then, yeah, they made the incision and straight away, it feels like someone's washing up in your stomach. Mm. That's the only thing I can compare it to. It's like there's a washing up bowl. He's moving bits of her around, grabbing the bits he wants to get. And that was it. And she was straight out. And we didn't know what it was going to be. So we deliberately, very old fashioned, decided not to find out deliberately. When they went, oh, it's a girl. And I always say to my daughter, they show me your foof. And they went, because that's how they do it. That's the proof, isn't it? They go, look, genitals of a girl. It's a girl. Very strange. But yeah, it was all over and done within in 10 minutes, I would say. 10 wow. minutes.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
Yes.
Do you wear knickers when you're doing a cesarean?
I don't remember. I don't think
there'd be blood, wouldn't there? I guess.
Mm. Yeah, because I don't even know how the if there's an after. No, well, that came out my stomach as well.
They'll pull that out.
Yeah, that all came out. So I didn't. There was no blood at all anywhere from. From my lady garden.
You didn't get any?
No, but I will say that recovering from C-section is the first day, because they encourage you to get up and move around out of the bed by the next morning to know that you're okay and things are healing and stuff. You have to commit to that process. And standing up after a C-section, that I passed out. I mean, it was the most horrific pain. And you have to stay in for about 3 days.
I'm really gonna have to trigger warning this podcast, aren't I?
Sorry, yes.
I'm had to do it, all of them.
Yeah, you know, it's very painful. It's very painful. But you do get over it very, very quickly. One of the things that they didn't tell me as well is you have to give yourself injections straight away as well.
Oh.
As soon as they get you out of the hospital and you go home with a massive, you know, those yellow needle bins.
Mm.
Oh, yes.
They have a junky sort of clinic.
That's to stop you from getting
it's iron. Oh. I think I assume so. Something like that, or iron, or something. So it's very weird. I felt very sort of they're kind of like they cut you up. Music. Da, 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 off you go. There's your bag of needles. You know, they'll grab a bit of the fat in your belly and just shove that in there, or grab a bit in your thigh. And it was just like, well, what if I'm a bit squeamish about needles, or what if I'm doing? Oh, strange, really. You're left to your own devices.
Yeah, don't people go to university to learn how to inject people, and you're just giving me a fucking bag of AZ needles to sleep?
I think they do. Yeah.
Another one. I don't know what was in.
I don't really to this day. I'm sure she said something about iron, but I had loads of other tablets and whatnots and everything else. And I mean, you're in a daze, aren't you? Whether it's a C-section or a normal pregnancy, you're in an absolute.
See, I always thought when I saw the other women around that had C-sections, I was like, oh, look at them ringing their bells and getting people bring them stuff. I was always like, not jealous, but you know,
yeah.
I deserved it, obviously.
But it's like your transverse abdominal muscle or something? It goes right across through all the muscles and everything. So it does take, you understand why they say 6 weeks.
You're cutting half, essentially.
It actually, it's interesting you say that because it felt kind of vaguely medieval. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's a process that I imagine probably went on hundreds of years ago, except now we've got better epidurals and stuff. But it is, but basically, they're just completely cutting you in half.
And sorry to go on about it. So there's no vaginal bleeding after a C-section at all.
Well, I didn't have any, but I don't know if that's the exception rather than the rule. I'm not sure. I think afterwards, for a couple of days, I did bleed, but that was after the effect, and I don't know if that was the drugs or what that was. I mean, it must throw your
sort of settling down in some way. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I think your whole body goes into a tailspin, doesn't it? Really.
I know, like with the whole pelvic floor thing, people go, "Oh, well, I had a C-section." It's like, well, that's rubbish. You still can still have leakage, ladies.
Yeah, because of the pressure. Because that weight right towards the last couple of weeks. Bearing down on you, it feels like you're carrying a bowling ball there. So, and it's already, you're already starting to widen because biologically that's what your body does in the last stages of pregnancy. But I don't want to get too into it, but I suppose it is a privilege not having to, you know, some of my friends that got, you know, torn and stuff, and that must be really awful. I don't think there's, you know what, there's like pros and cons to both options, aren't there? I think, as you say, with your sister, having an emergency C-section must be really, really frightening, especially when you've got a plan in place and that's all goes out the window and you're just like, oh no, what do I do now?
And can I ask, we're going quite deep, aren't we, did you have any, because I've always wanted to ask this, the bonding thing.
Yeah.
Because for me, I always connect birth with the whole, and I'm not sounding like, oh, you've got to push them out to have had that bonding, but the whole being absolutely exhausted and pushing them out and the blood and and then they're plonked on you, which can also go the other way. You're like, I'm too exhausted to even bond with you. But just you sort of saying, oh, you know, you're there in 5 minutes, there's a baby on you.
Yeah.
You still feel that some...
It's a really good question. In some ways, I remember at that moment, I envied... I felt like, it felt too easy because she was just plonked on me. The bonding side of things didn't... For me, that happened instantaneously. That was crazy. Like, I was just mad in love with her. And but I wasn't able to get my milk come through, and that was really frustrating because I didn't feel like a failure, but it was just sometimes with C-sections that happens because it takes a couple of days.
There's the hormone that kicks in then.
That's right. Milk, right, which is actually a bonding hormone, I think. I'm no scientist, but So that hadn't kicked in. And what happened was one of the nurses, you know, obviously they didn't want Melody to starve. They started giving her formula the very same night she was born. So then once she'd had it, she didn't want to breastfeed. Aww. So I didn't really have that option. I did try. I remember my mum always talks about this. There was one day, because I was staying with my parents so that they could help me through the process. We were moving house, so my husband at the time was doing all the move and stuff, and I had three midwives in a day come round, and every single one of them walked through the door, I'm gonna get you breastfeeding, buddy.
Oh, stop doing all this.
And they were all gone out of there. I've never heard of anything like it, and I mean, if I was more insecure about myself, I probably would have crumbled at that point and thought, oh my god, I was a failure. because I do think that that would, that does help with the bonding. Obviously there is something there, that skin on skin, and the, you know, I don't regret not being able to breastfeed. It would have been nice. It would have been a nice optional extra.
Yeah.
And of course it's more, it's cost effective. You know, she was on some formula that was like, she had reflux, so I had to get this special formula. And it was really expensive, you know. People don't really talk about the cost of things like that. We, you know, so... Well,
during the beginning of, before lockdown, when people were panic buying.
Yeah.
I had a friend who, she had a baby at the end of January, beginning of February, I think. And she couldn't get any of this fucking formula that she needed, the special reflux one. And I kind of, I was panicking for her.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's awful.
You know, she couldn't fucking find any anywhere, you know.
I saw a couple of messages actually on, I started a Facebook group at the start of things just to sort of try and connect people that were short of stuff. And there were definitely a couple of ladies that were in that situation. It's difficult because it's like there, but for the grace of God go I. I want to say what arseholes were buying everything up, but actually maybe they were feeling that same anxiety.
Yes. Yeah. You know. I saw someone put a picture up today that of some empty shelves in a supermarket. I was like, no, people started to panic again.
But was it a real picture from today though? This is the thing.
Are some people sharing?
Some of the newspapers are really scaremongering, and you know, I don't even want to get into that. There's so the whole nonsense of it all. I mean, you know, it's just I never truly believe something unless it's Chris Whitty, because I do trust Chris Whitty. I'm quite a fan. I've got a strange, weird crush on Chris Whitty. He's like, he knows stuff. Do you know what I mean? He just kind of
reassuring. I don't.
Chief medical officer.
Okay, yeah. I've been really bad on my name, so we like.
He's the bald one with the glass. Usually wears. No, he doesn't wear glasses. The other
no.
one. Valance wears.
I went proper old school, went on the government website and just looked at everyone's name, what they did. So I was like,
I think that's good.
Not knowing. what was I going to ask you?
The breastfeeding, and I'm going to call it an obsession by health workers.
Yes, that's what I'm going to go back to. Good.
I breastfed. I tried. It worked. Good for me. Lucky me. And that's as far as I'll go on it. And I liked it because it was easier, because I didn't have to bloody make sure there were clean bottles, and if I got caught short when I was out, you know, whatever, go and mop a boob out, and it was, you know, so all that kind of stuff. So I'm glad. However, I started smoking again, I'll admit, when Alistair was 10 days old, right? And you know, I'd go outside and I'd wear a coat and whatever, wash my hands and whatever. To start off with, I must admit, okay, I'm going to completely admit that. When the health workers came to see me, or I was ever going to take him to be weighed, and I say, like, oh my God, I'm smoking, and they go, doesn't matter, just keep feeding. Like, they couldn't even give a shit that I was smoking, as long as it was just like, just keep feeding. And it was like, wow, like, this is Trump in smoking.
That's amazing. You know, I'm quite surprised. I didn't think you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I mean, there is that whole breast is best. You get that throughout antenatal classes, throughout the messaging, everything is breast is best. But it's only best if your child actually wants your breast. And I joke about it with my daughter now. And I'm like, she was so determined on day one, she did not want that milk.
Yeah.
She didn't. She just didn't fancy it. That's her, that's her prerogative.
Again, I'm not a midwife or a latch specialist, but it's that latch, and maybe she just took better to the bottle and not the nipple and all that. I don't know. But my thing is going, we love midwives, obviously. I have midwives that listen to this, so I love you. But I don't think I've had one mum that said they've had a good midwife with the health worker, afterward.
Yeah,
like you were saying that I've had so many stories of people. I don't know what we need, because. I'll back up a bit. As in, I had a friend of mine, similar thing to you, come in and go, right, this is what you need to do. You need to get like a baseball, and she's like pushing the baby's face into her boob, and then another one.
Oh, God.
And no one's saying a different thing, and it's like, I felt it felt again a very class thing when I had my first one. I had trouble breastfeeding, not massively like some people. I got it in there, but a lot of my problem was because they got really really big, and I had problem with positioning and stuff. And you know, you're tired and you're not thinking straight. And so a lot of the people on my NCT were like paying for like a latch to come around.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's a thing.
Oh my gosh.
And right, okay, I didn't know that. I came really close, but I was also like, oh, it's like £90. I don't know if we can like afford that. And then yeah. And then feeling like, okay, so I'll just go. And in the end, just talking to different people, and it just happened. But I was really close doing it.
Wow.
And yeah, they come around, and I guess maybe they just can give you the time that, you know, sort of, I don't know, NHS midwives can't.
It can feel intimidating though, and you're at such a vulnerable state, and your body feels like it's just like this raw piece of meat at that stage, you know, and you don't know, you haven't, it's weird how it's having a baby, it's like you're growing something, but it's like all of your confidence goes into that little person, and they come out, and then you've got
absolutely spot.
Yeah, that's how it felt. I mean, it took me a long time to feel like a human being again, I have to say. I certainly didn't have any postnatal depression, but I just felt like very detached, from myself and who I used to be. And, you know, now I'm super strong, but I think, yeah, definitely looking back at it robbed me of something for sure.
That is so bloody interesting because, God, no, it's turned into therapy. But I always say I feel like I've lost something in the last couple of years. And you saying about confidence, that I've never heard that before. What that confidence in goes into that little person? Because I thought it was because I lost my mum coming up for 4 years. And I always put it down to that. I always go, well, it's because I've lost my anchor in this world. But maybe it's the blooming kids, because I'm just not as, I'm getting there.
I think so, yeah.
But my youngest is 2. So,
but I think you're still in that period.
Yeah.
It takes, I mean, look, I don't want to diagnose you or anything. I can only speak about my experience, but certainly I identified that very quickly after having her, probably within the second month. I remember just having this moment of thinking, oh, that is actually the thing that I'm missing is my confidence. And I wasn't particularly confident before, but I'm not talking self-confidence so much. I can't even put my finger on it. It's just that...
loving yourself? I know it's...
partly your sense of being able to make decisions and having faith in your decisions. And your intellect and lots of other bits that go into who you are and your confidence as a woman, let alone as a human. And that definitely took a while to claw back. And I can see, you know, my relationship ended for all kinds of reasons, but I can see why it's like one of the biggest reasons why people would split up, because it's like having a baby, throwing a bomb into a relationship, really. It's like, it's either going to bond you and, you know,
right.
How old was your daughter when you separated, Alexis?
She was two, yeah. So very young, but it's taken a lot of time. And actually now, especially during lockdown, we've kind of reached a point where there's like some civility there, but I think divorce takes a long time really to get it right and shape it in the best way for everyone. It's always going to be biased against somebody, but when you get it right and it's right for the child and for both sides, that takes years, you know.
Sorry. I'm taking it all, I often do this, don't you? You know what it's like. You're taking it all in as you and your many, many shows that you're,
I know, I'm so, honestly, I don't know who I am, what I am at the minute. No, but I've just been, I've thrown myself, my way of coping, obviously, like with the lockdown, which is our biggest psychological challenge, I would say,
my next question was good. How's it been, basically?
Well, I just try and be as busy as possible, because for me, that's always been, that's my way through, and sort of just to be prolific. Whereas And it's interesting because I've interviewed a lot of women that work in comedy. Like, there's such a vast experience of people that haven't done a thing during lockdown and are happy with it. Some feeling guilty, others really super prolific, others burning out from doing too much. And it's really, you know, it's hard to kind of strike a balance, especially when you have your child with you, as you know. But I've chosen to go down the path of just doing as much as I can. I mean, because I lost my job, my day job at the start of lockdown. Yeah. For me, it's been a huge opportunity to actually do what I really want to do. And I feel like, right. I'm like, oh, wow, I can do a show, do podcasts and stuff, which I never would have done. In all, you know, that is really, you know, not to make light of COVID and people that have lost someone, and it's awful. It's an awful thing. But I've really tried to sort of seize the positive of having this free time. And yeah, I'm broke, but that's kind of doesn't seem so important at the moment. No.
Poor but happy.
Poor but happy, yeah, which is actually all right, I think. I'd rather be poor but happy than rich and miserable.
I said the other day, somebody asked me to go on a podcast and they talked to inspirational mums and women. And yeah. I wrote out this reply, which was basically me saying, thank you, but no thank you. Because I was sort of basically saying, I don't think I'm an inspirational woman, right?
Why?
And when I was saying it to my husband, he was like, what the fuck are you going on about? And I was like, yeah, I know I've had a sitcom on TV and lots of other stuff, but it wasn't about that. I was like, but I'm making no flipping money from anything now. And he was like, it's so annoying that we judge our worth by the money that we're making.
That's really interesting that you say that. I mean, I think I probably have a lot of similarities with you in that respect. And, you know, I'm probably more successful today in comedy and all the things that I'm doing than I've been in years. But I sit there and go, yeah, but I mean, I haven't made that much and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't really matter. And also success is so, it's so subjective, isn't it? And it's really, it's because in our business, we're always looking at what everybody else is doing. And yeah, but they've done this and she's got that and he's earned that much. And it is difficult to turn the noise off and just go down your own path. But
and how do you turn it off? Do you... Because obviously you're on social media and stuff all the time because you kind of have to be, don't you?
You have, that's it. Yeah, you have to be. How do I turn it off? I kind of take it as a game now a little bit. I sort of gamify it in my head so that I don't, it's meaningless really. I haven't been trolled. Maybe this is an open invitation to anyone who's listening because it hasn't happened to me yet. And I think that's probably just because I'm a little bit older and I just don't really get that, you know. Probably they're scared, I don't know. My only negative experience is, as I say, comparison, which is the, what do they say, comparison is the death of joy or something, I don't know, something like that. So of course I do that, and of course I still look up every audition I don't get. I look up who got the part. Right. It's just an obsession. But I think because I'm really happy, that sort of top trumps it.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with fucking nothing. I've absolutely, you know. But my daughter's alive. She's safe. My parents are alive.
You haven't got nothing. You've got a lot.
No, exactly. But I mean, materially, or I haven't got a series out. I haven't got a book out or a show and all the things that I've tried to achieve. But, you know, it's also, I'm my own worst enemy. I set myself incredibly high standards. And actually what I would recommend and that I do every year is I write a list of everything that I've had out and achieved, every article and whatever. And then I look at it and go, oof, I did all right, actually. Because, you know, every day
That's a great exercise.
Every year I do it.
Viv talks about that. Viv Groskop talks about that.
Oh, I love her, yeah.
Lift it. She comes on here a lot and I'm always quoting her. If you climb, but I think she.
May I just quote you here, Viv, of yourself?
No, she mentioned something like that, and I thought the other day, oh, I must do that, because I think, I don't know if you find this, Alexis, but being in particularly like Instagram and stuff. It's very like, what are you doing today? What are you doing yesterday? Yeah. And obviously they don't, like, the, I'm sort of some from the old school days of the web, of your website, and then people would see everything. But on Instagram, you are what you are today. And so they, yes, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but
I think what you're trying to say is it's in the moment, but you have to stop and look back and sit there and go, oh, okay, I'm going to take a week out or a day out from all the things that I'm doing and just sit there and list all the things that I've done and just sit back and go, oh, I've done really well, I did all those things. It doesn't matter if they were brilliant or Oscar winning or whatever, it's just like, I actually did all of those things, good for me, but I mean, I don't really go on Instagram so much. Twitter's my main sort of vehicle. And I've seen a lot of this cancel culture over the summer has been huge. And that's scary. But
I heard about this today, cancel culture. Can you explain what it means exactly?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really tell you where it originated. It's something quite recent, probably in the last 10, 15 years, but where someone says something that's so offensive that they get cancelled. So it might be that I make a sweeping statement about gypsies or about, do you know what I mean? And then someone else picks up on it and it's like the whole internet cancel you and you can't come back from that. That's it, you know? So I think as people that work in that field that we do, whether you're podcasting, broadcasting, writing, etc., it makes all of us a little bit more like, oh gosh, I've really got to watch myself. Mm. Now I know I would never say anything awful about gypsies or anyone, but it's a pressure. That's the only pressure I feel, is that, you know, you're tired one day and you might say something and you don't mean to cause offense. And I'm always worried that I'm going to, you know, it's that eagerness to please. I'm always worried I'm going to say something that's misinterpreted. So
it's also publicity though. I mean, that's how it.
True. I would never want to have, oh God, I would never want to be successful on the basis of that though.
No.
I mean, otherwise I would have shagged a footballer a long time ago. You know, just to get on. None of them were interested. I tried. I threw myself. All the footballers.
And on that note, we're gonna have to sort of keep it shortish because you're a busy lady and you're off to do more streaming. Yes. So let's end on your. So we always like to ask. You've got a child-free night. We're giving you a babysitter, and you can go and do whatever you like within reason. No riding unicorns or something. No, we are in the real world. So where are you going? What are you doing? Where are you eating? What are you eating? What are you wearing? Who are you with?
Okay, so if someone else is paying, it would probably just be to go for a really nice uninterrupted meal where I'm not, I don't know about you, but since I had my daughter, I eat so disgustingly, so fast, because I'm always like, got to get her ready. I want to eat a slow and sexy meal. And have some wine, a steak. It would be like a gaucho. Oh, you're steakhouse.
Gemma, you've got someone to go and eat steak with.
There you go.
She can come, but she's sitting at a different time. I just want to be on my own.
Oh, sorry.
Gemma, she can sit across the way.
Gemma's on your night out, was on her own eating steak.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I spend a lot of time on my own and I go to restaurants on my own, but I've got very much used to my own company. So I think it would be with like a very devilishly handsome young man, perhaps Channing Tatum, or
have him.
Michael Fassbender, Tom Hardy. I mean, I can go through. There's quite a lot that would just suffice. I think they're all taken. And just because if you've got the babysitter, then you want to make a real night of it. Otherwise, normally it's like sit around in my pants and watch Selling Sunset, or whatever. But that's boring. I want to go out.
Yeah. I need to add, actually, because someone did ask me a very good question. I can't remember who it was. They said, are we saying they're going to stay for the night? And I'm going to add that in, actually.
Yes, because then I could end the evening in a luxurious spa hotel, knowing that when I wake up in the morning, I've got a hot stone massage booked.
Very nice.
So after all the wine and the steak, and you get the meat sweats because I haven't had a steak for so long, then I can just have my hot stone, get pebbles thrown at me. That would be it.
I wish I could give it to you. Oh, please. If people, on that note, if people go to our Patreon, sign up, we've got two tiers. There is the steak tier.
Yeah. Can they post me a steak? Maybe.
That would be nice.
And we'll make that happen one day, Alexis.
Thank you.
Right, we'll wrap up and let you go and get busy online. So yeah, quick shout to all the things that you'd like people to follow you on.
Check me out. Okay, so I've got a Twitch channel, twitch.tv/AlexisStrum, and I stream pretty much, as you said, every day. Now I do it 5 days a week. And my favourite show is the HR Department, which I do every Saturday, and I get comedians on and rejig their CV, and it's all very, very stupid and silly and fun. And I'm on Twitter at Alexis Stram. Obviously, I host and produce the Funny Women Survival Guide podcast. And I'm probably in your local Poundland just buying a Toblerone as well. Look out for me. Just give me a wave.
And I love your Gwyneth Paltrow impression.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, I kind of... I remember getting called up by Hattrick and they said, can you do any impressions? I was like, who do you, I'd do anyone for, do you know what I mean? Just do something with Hattrick. So, I mean, I did Kelly Brook and Gwyneth Paltrow, but I mean, I do a few impressions, but I'm really not that good.
Wow.
Gemma Collins is probably the one that I just kind of go into that naturally. I think I actually was born to be Gemma Collins, but I'm not going to do it now.
You want to say goodbye as Gemma Collins then?
Bobby, shut up. No, I am the JC. And I've got to go, but don't talk to me like that because you will never get this candy. I mean, it's not brilliant, but
I love this factory. all right, darling. I'm going to stop recording, as it were. And thank you, everyone. Please keep subscribing and listening and following and go to Patreon, please. Thank you.
Buy this woman a cup of bloody tea, for God's sake.
Coffee. We've got two things now. It's got buy a mum a coffee or buy a mum a child free hour. Thank you, Gemma. Thank you, Alexis. Thank you to me, Hattie Ashdown. You've been listening to the Funny Mummies for Soho Radio or the Other Woman Show.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast with me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you to my panel and guests today. Edited and produced by Scott Kingsnorth in association with Screaming of Laughter, the lunchtime comedy club where babies can come too. These shows go out live on Soho Radio for the Other Woman Show. See schedule for details. Please subscribe, rate and review and share this podcast. We really appreciate it, and it's the only way more people can find us. So see you next time for more Mum and Tonic.